welcome to another episode of the Scarlet Nation podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. I'm Chris Sakonis, joined by Bobby Darin. Today we've got a few topics to get to. Rutgers football in the midst of the first week of spring practice. We've got Pro Day was on Thursday. Several Scarlet Knights looking to sort of continue that NFL pipeline as well. We'll also touch a little bit on Rutgers basketball transfer portal news. That never stops, and a lot of interesting stuff going on in the portal as well. So we'll get to all of that. Bobby, I want to start with Pro Day, though, because, you know, all the hype since the end of last season has been around Max Melton, just how high he could go in the draft. You know, he spoke to reporters, and, you know, he was, you know, he has seen his stock rise since the NFL Combine. Bobby, Max Melton looks to be a guy that's going to be taken pretty high off the board, and a lot of potential for him to have success in the NFL.
You know, and a lot of things you're hearing now is he's going to be a second-round pick. Not really a surprise. Greg Schiano kind of knew what he had in Max long before the combine and the Senior Bowl. And there were teams that were in on him, that were clued in to him earlier in the process. But I think he just started getting more mainstream notoriety because of the numbers he put up. But really solid player, you know, has all the physical tools. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting, Chris, how he fared in the interview sessions could determine, you know, if he sneaks up even higher. Interesting story. The last first-round pick Rutgers had in 2010 was Devin McCourty, and he made it into that bottom of the first round based on his interview with Bill Belichick, who, you know, was just blown away by how knowledgeable he was of the entire defense. He knew everybody's position, what they had to do, and that kind of put him over the top because he wasn't a guaranteed first-round pick. Same with Max. I don't know how well did he do in the interviews. That remains to be seen. But even if he doesn't, you know, duplicate that McCourty beat, he could be in the second round. And the last second round pick was Kamoko Touré at number 52 in 2018. Before that, you have to go back to, you know, McCourty to get somebody that went higher than the second round. A lot of third round picks, you know, dating back to 2012 with Mohamed Sanu and Logan Ryan, Daron Harmon, Tyler Croft as well, Leonte Crew, don't want to forget him. But I think you're going to really see, you know, Melton, you know, score in this draft. I think he's a second-day lock. I think he's a second-round pick. And, you know, besides that, Chris, it's really going to be tough. I mean, you might see some of these other guys, you know, maybe get a camp invite. But I have a hard time finding a guy there who's going to make a 53. Maybe Deion Jennings can sneak in somewhere and get on a practice squad. But, you know, you were there Pro Day. The times just weren't what they needed to be for guys to get, you know, a more serious look.
Yeah, and that's going to be something to watch, too, because, and Greg Schiano touched on this a little bit, for a lot of these guys, you know, Max Melton, of course, was invited to the NFL Combine. He participated in all the drills there, didn't participate in all the drills at Pro Day because, to be honest, he didn't really have to. But for a lot of these other guys, you know, that was the one chance to really make an impression with the numbers. And, you know, if the NFL teams don't, you know, look at the numbers the way that, you know, of them being at the point where they need to be, that's going to be a big challenge for them to really get to where they want to go as far as the NFL is concerned, Bobby.
Yeah, and one of the things that they do have working to their advantage is that the credibility that Greg Schiano has built up. I mean, if you look at since he came back, you know, Isaiah Pacheco's seventh-round pick, nobody really wanted him in the draft, and it's no secret to the success he's had with the Kansas City Chiefs. A guy like Christian Izzy gets passed over by every team, and, you know, he just goes out and becomes a starting nickelback as a rookie for a Tampa Bay Buccaneers playoff team with a very good defense. So, you know, you start to see that. You see Kristen Braswell get drafted. Trey Avery's playing well. You know, he had some time to spend with Schiano. So, you know, that presence of Rutgers in the draft and in the NFL is definitely increasing. And that's thanks in part to Greg Schiano, because he did it the first time around. When Rutgers guys go to the NFL, guys know that they're going to, or coaches know that those guys are going to be prepared. They're going to do what they have to do. They're going to be workmanlike in their approach. They don't have to worry about, you know, guys fading off, trailing off, doing any other sort of thing. So it's really a difference maker having Greg Schiano back as head coach in terms of getting guys into the NFL.
And on that note, I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the current Rutgers team. Now, first week of spring practice, again, well underway for the Scarlet Knights. The big question on everyone's mind is, how the quarterback battle between Gavin Whimsitt and Ethan Kalyakmanis goes. I think that that is going to be something to watch throughout spring. Bobby, what are your thoughts on that and just sort of where this offense as a whole, are heading into spring practice?
You know, it's still really early, so I don't think we'll have any legitimate updates on the quarterback race. I think it's going to encompass the whole spring because, you know, Chris, the first couple of days are just basically out there throwing around, working out. They're not in pads, just regular kind of workouts almost. So it's tough to really get a grasp on that until things start kicking up and they're going live. I mean, two scrimmages we'll see in the upcoming weeks on Saturdays should be a real telling sign of who's really forging ahead. But, you know, a lot of new guys on the team. I don't think people realize just how many there are. 18 early enrollee freshmen along with four transfers. You know, and then you have Nassim Brantley who didn't play last year. You know, that's 23 guys on an 85-man scholarship roster. You know, that's quite a few. You know, it's almost my math is right, a little less than a third of the team. Wasn't my strong point there, Chris, but in arithmetic. But a lot of new faces, so we're going to see these guys get acclimated. And it's still too early for these freshmen to really assert themselves because everything's moving 100 miles an hour for them. They're just trying to get their feet adjusted and planted. You have guys that are supposed to be seniors in high school, 18 of them. So a lot of learning going on there. But, you know, early good reviews on A.J. Surace, but, you know, he's not going to get a ton of reps in camp. But they do a lot of drills off to the side with threes and whatnot and younger guys. So he'll get some work. And I'm interested to see how it kind of pans out. But one guy we keep hearing about early is Dymir Miller, wide receiver, brought in from FCS Monmouth, you know, led the FCS in receiving yards. And Chris, I was a little hesitant to kind of hype him up too much because I jumped on the Jaquay Jackson bandwagon last year, and that D2 to Big Ten jump, it was a tough one, and he performed serviceably, but wasn't the number one threat that the staff hoped he would be. And so I'm gonna proceed with caution with Miller, but the early the early reviews are very good, and it seems like they might have had a good one in him.
Yeah, and again, Dymir Miller, someone who is, was ranked really highly in our transfer portal rankings as well. Someone who, looks the part on tape. Very interesting to see how he fares, as the offseason goes. And it's a wide receiver group, Bobby, that really, brings back a bit more experience. You've got, your Christian Dremel at the top. But you've also got that freshman class last year that outside of Ian Strong didn't get a ton of reps, but the potential is there. And I'm really interested to see personally, how that group grows and develops through the course of the offseason. And I think that's going to be an interesting sign as far as how far this passing attack can really go.
Yeah, and there is some talent at the position. And we saw some position changes. I think a guy to keep an eye on is Thomas Amunkwa, moved over from safety. And a lot of people believe, Chris, that he should have been a wide receiver to begin with, but there was some depth issues at safety to kind of see why they brought him there. But this guy's just transformed his body amazingly since he got on campus 2 years ago. I think he's a guy to watch in that mix at wide receiver. And you saw some position changes. Jesse Ofuri goes to safety from wide receiver. He was a guy that, some practices last year, you're like, wow, this guy can really play. But there were some practices where he was dropping passes, too. So you saw the ability. They're going to work him in at safety. I think he could have a bright future there. But a lot of guys, still too early to tell on the incoming freshmen at the wide receiver spot. They're just getting their feet wet, like I said, Ben Black and Corey Duff. Now, Isaiah Crumbler has switched to defensive back, so there's just two freshmen wide receivers now. And there's a lot of numbers there. Seven came in the class of 2023. You saw Belay Nakun move over to the cornerback. You saw Ofuri move. So there's five of them left there. And I think that's a sign that some of those guys are really coming along. But it's something we're going to monitor throughout spring practice. And there is talent. It's just, somebody has to go out and win that spot and show themselves and turn that potential into performance. And looking at that position battle, Chris, it's anybody's game because they don't really have a lot of production returning. Ian Strong had, 16 catches last year. I mean, that's your big the big guy returning. And, you know, you have Chris Long back, but even he's in jeopardy of being passed over by some of these younger guys. So that's something we're really going to keep an eye on. And it's something where, you know, you could see some of these younger, lesser-known guys emerge in the spring.
Yeah, and that's always something to watch in spring football. Before we shift gears to basketball, Bobby, you know, we touched on the quarterback battle. We touched on, you know, the wide receiver group and that area. What other factors are you sort of looking at as spring football continues and as this offseason continues?
Well, it's similar in every spring. You always look for those breakout guys. I mean, you kind of know what you're getting out of the seniors. So you're not going to see Aaron Lewis and Wesley Bailey take a ton of snaps, but, you know, Jabril Abdul-Rahman at defensive end is going to get a lot of work because those guys are going to get the quote-unquote senior treatment. So those are the positions I really like to look at. These guys that haven't played as much, but will have an opportunity because, you know, the staff is not going to risk getting an Aaron Lewis or Wesley Bailey banged up in camp because they know what they have there. Linebacker, you know, Tyreen Powell now is still recovering. Mohamed Toure is not going to get a crazy amount of work because he's a six-year guy. You know, he's arguably the best defensive player. So you're going to see Moses Walker, Dario Chibome. You're going to see Abram Wright. Guys like that work in the mix. And, you know, that's what I'm interested in seeing. Which of those guys can really take that next step and really come up and assert themselves and be a contributor? You know, what's the position battle looking like beyond Eric Rogers and Robert Longer being at quarterback? Who's going to be the number three and four corner? You have Al-Shadid Salam. You have Bo Musco, who's, you know, got a ton of potential. You also have Kevin Levy coming in as a freshman early enrollee. So then you have, you know, some of those guys we mentioned with the position changes as well, Isaiah Crumpler. So those are the battles that are really intriguing in spring because you know what you have in the starters, but what's behind them? Because next year too, Chris, you're losing, you know, the bulk of this starting defense. So these guys who are going to start to emerge through the spring are going to be the guys that take over the reins next season.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think that's going to be an interesting transition to watch as well down the road. Before we wrap this up, do want to shift gears a little bit, talk about where the transfer portal stands with Rutgers basketball. Latest news coming later in this week where Gavin Griffiths announced, or it was revealed rather, that he is entering the transfer portal, so he is leaving the program. Doesn't leave Rutgers with a lot of returning experience. Of course, you've got this highly ranked class coming in. But Bobby, Gavin Griffiths was a guy that, you know, I think the coaching staff was really counting on to be a cornerstone of this next era of Rutgers basketball. Former top 50 recruit. Didn't have the freshman year that I think a lot of people thought or hoped that he would. But this is a guy with a lot of potential, and I'm curious to see where Rutgers goes from this point.
You know, and Chris, I know he came in packed with potential, but it really wasn't a good fit last year. I mean, you watched that team play, and the guard play was poor. It wasn't like he was set up with a lot of open looks. His minutes kind of waned as the season went on. He got frustrated. It looked like he had some tired legs by the end of the season. He's not a defensive player. This is a defensive-minded Steve Pikeville team year in and year out. So if you can't play defense and you're not dropping 30, you're not going to be out there for a long time. So, I mean, in hindsight, you look at it and you say it really wasn't a good mesh. Now, would it have been good next year? You bring in Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper or Jeremiah Williams. I mean, it seems like, wow, he could just come in and shoot. You didn't see it that way. And you can kind of see his frustration as the season went on. So not a crazy surprise. I mean, you saw the quotes from before the season when he said he'll never transfer, but I wouldn't hold it against an 18-year-old when they make that kind of comment because they really don't know the realities of college basketball. But, you know, Chris, where do they go from here? It's a great question. They're targeting a lot of low mid-major guys. Even made contact with a Division II guy in Zach LeBlue. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I apologize. But, you know, I don't know who they're going to get. It looks like they're going to go after these, you know, the lower major or mid-major guys. You know, they had success in the transfer portal with Cam Spencer. If you look at the next best success of the Pike Lara and the transfers, it was Jacob Young out of Texas. That was kind of before the NIL racket really kicked in gear. He had to sit out an entire season. So, you know, I think they're going to go that mid-major kind of route, and he's really going to try to find somebody like he did with Cam Spencer. But I mean, six guys left, so you have a lot of spots open, and there's a chance that Oscar Palmquist could be gone. So you have four transfers coming in, potentially five, Chris. I mean, it's going to be a new-look Rutgers team.
Yeah, and I think it really is going to be interesting to see what veterans Steve Feichel brings in, because I don't think you're going to see Rutgers go after, you know, these players that enter the transfer portal after 1 year or 2 years, or maybe 2 years, depending on the fit. But I really do think age is going to be a big factor. I mean, you look at the guards and also a forward in Zach Martini that Rutgers has been in contact with, you know, one thing they all have in common is they've all been playing college basketball for a long time. And I do think the benefit of having to build around Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper is you don't necessarily need to get a Cam Spencer type that you really want to lean on offensively. I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Martini, he's someone who, you know, you could sort of, you know, stick him on the wing and he can hit the three ball, he can score and be a complimentary piece as well. I think that is going to be the focus. And I think that's a benefit because you look at Rutgers and where the Scarlet Knights stand in terms of NIL and stuff, it's going to be very hard for Rutgers to pull in like a high-end transfer. So I think people need to temper their expectations in that point. But on the flip side, you don't necessarily have to because you're bringing in two future high first-round NBA draft picks in Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. So I do think Rutgers has that working in its favor.
You're right. And, you know, going back to what we were saying about Gavin Griffin, it's a lot about the right fit. You know, he just, at that time, this last season, he wasn't the right fit for that team. And you saw his production suffer because of it. It's a matter of who Steve Feichel can go out and grab. Now, it'd be nice to go out and grab, you know, some of these top names in the portal, you know, the center from Stanford. And, you know, they have a lot of other big name guys, but the reality is, it's just not going to be able to pay those guys. I mean, you saw it with Cliff leaving, and now he's one of the most coveted guys in the transfer portal. He's going to get a big payday. Now, Rutgers doesn't necessarily need that same type of player, but you just need a complement to, you know, these guys, Bailey and Harper. But you also have to look at it, Chris, as, you know, these guys are going to be one and done. So are you just putting everything into the cup for next season, or do you have something, you know, to build on beyond that? You know, Jeremiah Williams still has 2 years of eligibility left. You have Jermichael Davis coming back as well. And then you have the other freshmen coming in, and Bryce George and Lathan Somerville and Dylan Grant. So you also have to think about building for the future. So it's not necessarily bringing in just one-done transfers as well. I think it's really going to be a point of emphasis for Feichel to get a couple guys who have more than 1 year of eligibility remaining, because once Ace and Dylan leave, you might enjoy a great year next year, but if you don't recruit another Ace and Dylan, I mean, what's going to happen for the season beyond that? And, you know, it's a lot to juggle, and this is going to be one of the busiest off-season for Rutgers that I can remember in a long time. And you also have, it's just the NIL situation is in there. It's just so much involved, Chris. It's just a really busy time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see these next few weeks as the transfer portal continues are going to be really pivotal in seeing just how far the Scarlet Knights can go with Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. So definitely a lot to keep an eye on as that goes on. And the place to keep an eye on it is ScarletNation.com. You can always interact with Bobby and myself and Brian Doan on the message boards if you're a VIP subscriber. You can also get the latest information on the transfer portal, on spring football, on all of that stuff at ScarletNation.com. So be sure to keep it here for that. And for Bobby Darum, this is Chris Acona saying thank you for listening to this episode of the Scarlet Nation podcast. We'll talk to you again next time.